But we are going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about Egypt tonight. And here's what we're going to do with our studies. And I talked with Josh about this because he was the one who asked me to do this. And I tried to figure out what the children's classes were doing along this line. And at first, when I thought about the Vacation Bible School and thought about these lessons, I thought about going back and just doing some archaeological studies. I thought about going back and really digging into some of the historical aspects of these cities and bringing you all sorts of data about dates and sizes and events and just some archaeological stuff that would be really cool. I thought about doing that. But then I thought, okay, at the end of the day, where does that get us? That gets us some really cool facts that maybe we haven't heard before, but how does that change our lives? Maybe not so much. So I'm not planning to just dig into these sites as locations and just expound upon some kind of archaeological information. If you want to do that, check Google. He's got a lot of good information on that. But what I want to do instead is to allow the Bible to take us into these locations and allow events that happened in these various locations to teach us. So the theme on these is discovering something in a certain location. So tonight, the focus tonight is on this idea of deliverance and discovering deliverance in the land of Egypt. So here's what I'd like to ask you to do. I want you to get your Bible, and if you're using a phone or something, you can do that. But this, what I'm going to ask you to do here is going to be a little bit hard to do with your phone. But with your Bible, I would like you, we're going to mark three passages because we're going to be going back and forth between three different places in the Bible, okay? I'd like you to mark Genesis chapter 15, all right? Just stick a finger, a piece of paper, gum wrapper, something in Genesis chapter 15. Then go to Exodus chapter 1 and stick something, a card or something over in Exodus chapter 1. And then go to Acts chapter 7. Yep, New Testament. Jump all the way over to Acts chapter 7, stick something over in Acts chapter 7. And I'm doing that because I want to refer to those passages, but I want you to be able to find them kind of rapidly as we do it. So Genesis 15, Exodus chapter 1, Acts chapter 7. And you might ask, why Acts chapter 7? We're talking about Egypt tonight. What does Acts chapter 7 have to do with that? Well, maybe when we get over there and discuss some of that, we'll talk about why we're looking at Acts chapter 7. But here's where I want us to go. And Josh, if you were here this morning at 9 o'clock, Josh he stole some of what we're going to be talking about. So you might think this is a repeat, and it is. But all you saw this morning was you saw the preview. In Josh's class this morning. You ever been to a movie and they show the previews before the actual, you saw a preview this morning, and so you got the highlights. So some of this might sound repetitive, but what we're going to talk about mainly tonight are God's people being delivered out of Egypt. But the first thing I want us to think about is, was there anything ever good about Egypt? We think about the bad stuff about Egypt, that God's people had to get out of there. But was there ever anything good? Was there ever a time when Egypt was a good place, or at least a place of refuge that God's people went to? You think of any occasions? Okay. There were a number of times where God's people went there because of a famine. And the first time we read about Egypt is back in Genesis chapter 12, when Abraham went there. Why did Abraham go to Egypt? What was happening? There's a famine. Okay, so why did people go to Egypt when there was a famine? Food. So Egypt has food. Why does Egypt have food when nobody else does? Oh, they got that Nile River thing, right? They've got a source of water that was supplying their land and able to continue to allow them to grow crops when other distant places were not able to do that. So sometimes Egypt was a good place to go. You know, if you don't have any food and you know there's food somewhere over here, where are you going to go? Where would you take your family? If there's no more food to be had here, would you just say, well, tough luck for us. There's no more food to be. No. Where is there a place? And that's why Abraham went there. Now, there was another occasion in the New Testament where Joseph and Mary went to Egypt. Now, why'd they go to Egypt? Like a sightseeing tour? Checking it off their bucket list? They've got to get away, not from a famine. They've got to get away from a lunatic. They've got to get away from Herod. Why do they need to get away from Herod? He wants to kill your baby. If somebody was out to kill your baby, what would you do? You might go to Egypt too, right? So they hightail it to Egypt to get away from Herod. So in that situation, Egypt a good place to be? It's a place of refuge. Herod's not going to come looking for us here. And so they go to hide out until such a time that it was safe for them to come back. And then the account that we're going to be looking at tonight is dealing with the aftermath of Jacob and his family going down to Egypt. Why did Jacob and his family go down to Egypt? Because of a famine. Now, in each of these three cases, was the providence of God at work? God or Abraham, father of the faithful, did God make some promises to him? Yeah. Would it be kind of bad if Abraham starved to death? So, providence of God leads Abraham down to Egypt. Providence of God, when Jesus, baby Jesus, or at least infant Jesus, is looking to be killed. Providence of God lead him down there? Sure. Was the providence of God involved in Israel going down to Egypt? Now, hang on a second. When we say Israel, what are we talking about when we say Israel? When we say Israel, we may be talking about the nation of Israel, but where did the nation of Israel get its name? From Jacob. Because God called Jacob Israel. So we've got to make that connection between the nation of Israel or the Israelites as the descendants of Jacob. Now, how did they get to Egypt? Did they get an invitation? They sort of got an invitation, didn't they? Who'd they get an invitation from? They got an invitation from Joseph to go to Egypt. Big deal. I mean, who's Joseph? He's a nobody, right? Not in Egypt. Joseph was a somebody in Egypt. How did he become a somebody? If he was a nobody that got sold into slavery, how did he become a somebody? Providence of God. You got Acts chapter 7 as one of your markers, right? Acts chapter 7 is the longest recorded sermon in the New Testament. Okay? So Acts chapter 7 is a sermon that we have recorded in the New Testament, longest one at least in number of verses that we have recorded. And it's interesting that it's not one of the apostles that preaches this sermon. Wasn't Peter, wasn't John. Who's preaching in Acts chapter 7? Stephen. All right, so Stephen begins preaching in Acts chapter 7. And what you have, this is a great chapter to know about because it is a Reader's Digest version of a compact history of the nation of Israel. So if you want a Reader's Digest version of Genesis 12 through just the book of Deuteronomy, the book of Joshua, that's a big section of Scripture, read Acts chapter 7. And here is a compact version of that. And he spends most of his time talking about Moses, and he spends a few verses towards the end talking about David and Solomon and the building of the temple. Those are like the closing verses of his sermon. But most of this is about Abraham and then about Moses. So here's a Reader's Digest version of that history. So here's a great chapter to study, right? Because if he's not only giving me a Reader's Digest version, here's an inspired sermon about the Old Testament. So let me ask this question. What does God want me to know about Israel? What does God want me to know about Moses? What does God want me to know about the Exodus? what did God want them to know? And actually, so here's a, and I'm not saying the other things that are not in this sermon are not important. God doesn't want me to know them, but God pulls out these highlights. Says these, here's something important to know. So anyway, in Acts chapter 7, the first part of the sermon, he's preaching about Abraham. Get down to verse 9. Acts 7 and verse 9. And the patriarchs becoming envious. Who are the patriarchs in this verse? Sold Joseph into Egypt. So who are the patriarchs? Well, back up to the end of verse 8. Jacob begot the 12 patriarchs. Sometimes we think of the patriarchs as Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Sometimes that's what we think of, and that's true. That's the patriarchal age of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But the end of verse 8 says, Jacob begot 12 patriarchs. And verse 9 says, the patriarchs, becoming envious, sold Joseph into slavery. But what I want you to see are the last five verses of that, last five words of that verse. What happened? God was with him. Joseph gets sold, as we looked at this morning, but to the Ishmaelites as they were coming through, and eventually comes down as a slave and then a prisoner. And how did he become exalted to have so much authority in the land of Egypt? Providence of God. God was with him. And now I want you to see the beginning of verse 10, because this ties in with the key word that we're looking at tonight. God was with him and delivered him out of all of his troubles, gave him favor and wisdom in the presence of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he made him governor over Egypt and all of his house. So here we have a little snippet of what happens with Joseph, sold into Egypt. So God takes that account in Genesis 37 or 30 and shortens it, says sold into, but God was with him, and God delivered him out of everything that was going to happen. That's initially how God's people get down into Egypt. Verse 11 says, now a famine and great trouble came over all the land of Egypt and Canaan, and our fathers found no sustenance. But when Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he sent out our fathers first. And the second time Joseph was made known to his brothers, and Joseph's family became known to the Pharaoh. Then Joseph sent and called his father Jacob, and all his relatives to him, 70 or 75 people. So Jacob went down to Egypt, and he died, he and our fathers. How did they get down into Egypt? They got there by the providence of God. They got there because God was taking care of Joseph. Why would God care anything about Joseph? Because God was getting ready for his people to move down to Egypt. You think God knew there was a famine coming? You think God could take care of his people? What were the promises that God made to Abraham? Remember the promises God made to Abraham? I'm going to make of you a great nation. I'm going to make of you a great nation. We're reading about Jacob. That's Abraham's grandson. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. There's 70 people that go down into Egypt. Is that a great nation? There's 70 people sitting right here. You all are a massive nation, right? This world ought to fear you. Looking at some of you, if they were smart, they would fear you. But here's 70 people right here. If we go marching down into Egypt, are they going to be shaken when they see us coming? Oh boy, here comes some more freeloaders. They want some money. They want some of our grain. Oh boy, here they come again. I'm going to make of you a great nation. They go down into Egypt and they're there for 400 years. What happens in the process of time while they're in Egypt? They become a great nation. We're going to see in just a minute that Egypt began to fear the Israelites. What do they got to fear? It's just 70 people, right? Well, you give 70 people 400 years and what's going to happen? They multiply to 603,550 men of war, plus their wives, women, children. You got a couple million people living in your boundaries, and they feared them because of the providence of God. I'm going to make of you a great nation, and I'm going to put that great nation where? In a great land. Was that Egypt? No way. That's not Egypt. I'm going to put this great nation, but I've got to put them somewhere. I've got to have a great land. And that's what's happening. That's what Stephen's preaching about in Acts chapter 7, is how God brought all of that about. So, first thing I just wanted us to see is that Egypt at one time was a refuge to which sometimes God's people fled. But what we're looking at primarily tonight is that Egypt was a place, at least in the days of Moses, that God's people needed to flee from. It was a place they needed to get out of. Go to Exodus chapter 1. This is, if you take time, you know, sometimes when we get on a Bible reading program, but a Bible reading schedule, we think, okay, today is January 14th, and I've got to read Exodus chapters 1 through 3. And so we just sit down, and we say, okay, I got 20 minutes, zoom, zoom, zoom. Okay, 20 minutes, read the three chapters, and I go on about the rest of my day. And that's not a bad thing to do. But if you take time just to sit here for a little bit, this is pretty incredible to start reading the book of Exodus and to see what's transpiring as God's people, at the end of the book of Genesis, where are God's people? They're pretty cozy in Egypt, right? Is being in Egypt a bad thing at the end of Genesis? They're pretty cozy there, right? They're given the choice land. They get to go live in Goshen, right? They're given the choice space to live, and everything's, pardon the expression, but everything's kind of hunky-dory for them. And then you pick up the book of Exodus. And has something changed? Well, verse 6 says, Joseph died. All of his brothers and all of that generation. Verse 8 says, not only Joseph died, but now you've got a new king over Egypt. And he did not know Joseph. Is that a big deal? You got somebody that doesn't know who Joseph is. Somebody says, who cares? Who's Joseph? Did God, through his providence, allow Joseph to find favor in Pharaoh's sight? That Pharaoh. Yeah. And when that Pharaoh is no longer there, all of a sudden, you've got some issues. And so you've got a nation here that is going to have some problems. Now, guess what? God said this was going to happen. Go back to Genesis chapter 15. You got your marker over there? You go back 400 years. You think God knew what was going to happen 400 years in advance? When you get to Genesis chapter 15, you have God talking to Abram at that time. I'm going to call him Abraham, but he's still called Abram at this point. And look in verse 5, where God says to Abram, look now toward heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them. What's he trying to prove? So shall your descendants be. God is the master of object lessons. Go ahead, look at the stars. See if you can count them. That's what's going to happen to your descendants. But look down at verse 13 is where I want us to focus just for a minute. Genesis 15, verse 13. God said to Abram, know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them. And they, the nation in which they are living, they will afflict them, God's people, 400 years. So you rewind from the book of Exodus 400 years, and what's God saying? My people, this great nation, they're going to be down in some foreign land. He doesn't name them here, but he says they're going to be down in a foreign land where they are strangers, and they are going to end up serving in this foreign land. When Jacob and that nation of 70 went down to Egypt, were they serving? Were they being afflicted? No, not yet. But eventually that's what happened. God said that's what was going to happen, is that they were going to end up in a place of affliction. And so come back to Exodus chapter 1, and that's what we're seeing. There comes a king over Egypt who does not know Joseph. He said to his people, verse 9, look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Isn't that interesting? He recognizes we are in trouble. So what should we do? Verse 10, come, let us deal shrewdly with them. What does that mean? What are we going to do to these people? We're going to be sneaky? We're going to be sneaky. How are we going to treat them? We're going to treat them fairly? We're concerned about them, so let's deal shrewdly with them, lest they continue to multiply, lest they multiply, and it happen in the event of war, that they also join with our enemies and fight against us, and so go up out of the land. So let's see what we can do to make their lives miserable. So what does verse 11 say? Therefore they set taskmasters over them. Would you like to have a taskmaster over you? He says, well, I'm going to work tomorrow. Tomorrow's Monday, right? I'm going to have a taskmaster over me. They set taskmasters over them. To do what? To afflict them with what? With burdens. With heavy burdens. Here are burdens that they were going to afflict them with above measure. Look at verse 13. The Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with, my Bible says, rigor. Does that sound exciting? We're going to make you serve. We're going to make this difficult to you. We're going to afflict you with burdens, and we're going to make you serve with rigor. Verse 14. They made their lives bitter with hard bondage. This sounds just great, right? Would you want to live here? If you were an Israelite and you were in Egypt and this is the way you were being treated, you want to stick around? What's going on here? We went from a favored people to all of a sudden we are in bondage. We are in slavery. All of a sudden we were friends and now we're not. We're the enemy. You remember what they did in chapter 5? We won't go over and read it, but you remember chapter 5? They made the Israelites, what was their task of the Israelites in chapter 5? Making bricks. Sounds like an easy job, right? Just, you know, copy paste, right? Just control C, control V, just making bricks. Is it that easy? Man, hard work, right? What did the Israelites or what did the Egyptians do to make it even harder? Oh, you all got it so easy making these bricks, we're going to take your straw away. Is that a big deal? Well, they not only took their straw away, what about the quota? Did they reduce the quota? Oh, it's going to be harder for you to make bricks, so we'll reduce the quota. Forget that. They're trying to make it as hard and miserable for them as they can. So you put yourself in the Israelites' place. Would you want deliverance? We got to get out of here. But how are we going to get out of here? How are we going to leave this place? I mean, we have no hope. You know, we're not organized. We don't have the means by which to take any kind of action against this nation. And so we're just going to kind of be stuck here. You still got your finger over in Acts chapter 7? Flip over there for just a second. Because God talked about this. Acts chapter 7. Look down at verse 17. We're really going to look in verse 19, but verse 17. When the time of the promise drew near, which God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, till another king arose who did not know Joseph. This man, this new king, dealt treacherously with our people, and he oppressed our forefathers. What did he do? Making them expose their babies so that they might not live. And so, come back to Exodus chapter 1. Is that what they're doing? I've got it down here somewhere. Yeah. They're enforcing. You've heard about people wanting to enforce population control today, haven't you? Does that scare you? That there's people today that have a mentality that, you know what? You know what's going to save our planet today? They say we've got to control how many people are on our planet. Well, how do you control how many people are on the planet? Can you control that in a good way? I mean, I don't want to go there. But here's the Egyptians. How do we control this nation of Israel? How do we get a grip on these people that are just multiplying, lest they figure out that they outnumber us, unless they figure out that they can defeat us? How do we let's kill their boys. Let's kill their sons. Okay, put yourself in the Israelites' place. A new king comes, and he doesn't know you. He doesn't know the bond that was there, and so he starts making life hard on you. Okay, we can We can tough it out, right? And they start making more demands on you and putting burdens on you. Okay, we're gonna fight through this. All right, then they take their straw away from you, and they don't lessen the demand on you, and they just keep praying. Oh man, this is getting horrible and horrible. But when they kill your boys, you crossed a line. You know, you can make it hard on me, we could tough it out. But if you're going to start killing our sons, So what did some of the midwives do? Can you imagine being a midwife? And you were the one who had the job. If it's a boy who's born, kill it. I didn't sign up for this. I mean, you become a midwife to give life, right? If it's a boy, kill it. What'd they do? Well, some of them got to work late, right? Oh, when I got there, the baby was already born. I don't know what happened, but the baby was already gone. I can't do anything about it. They don't want to kill the boys. So what happens to Moses? You know the great story about baby Moses. Is the providence of God involved at all with baby Moses?
Yes.
I mean, what would have happened? What would have happened when you had a child if you stuck him in a basket and put him out on the river? I'm not asking what would happen to you, all right? That's a whole other story, all right? Because in our day and age, they'd have satellite footage of you doing it. You know, they'd have somebody with some body cam that's turning it into the police. I mean, I'm not saying what would happen to you. What's going to happen to that baby? You put him in a basket and put him on the river. That baby's going to drown. Or be somebody's dinner. Providence of God involved at all here? Wow, huge. Do you think that God's people who are dealing with all of this ever thought that it would be a baby who would deliver them? We need a great deliverer. And what did God already have in mind? We're going to take care of it through this little baby that gets saved. Fast forward 1,500 years. Little baby Jesus comes into the world. Ever think anything could come out of that? Here's this baby who's born and laid in a manger because there was no room anywhere else, and he's out there with the animals. What good is ever going to come out of this? Anything good? Interesting how God's providence works years in advance before it's ever needed. So anyway, that's where God's people are. How would you like to be an Israelite in that day? Do you need deliverance? Oh, buddy, do you need deliverance? You need out of this place. All right, go back to Genesis 14. Chapter 15, verse 14. And this will be the last time we're in Genesis 15. But I want you to see, again, what did God say 400 years before ever it happened? He first says in verse 13 of Genesis 15, my people are going to be in a foreign land and they're going to be serving with rigor down in this land. Verse 14. Don't you wish you were in that class? Verse 14. Why don't you all do that? Never mind. Verse 14. And also the nation whom they serve. Look at this. Imagine you. Do you think any of the Jews in Egypt knew that these verses had been spoken to Abraham? I don't know. But imagine that you knew that God had said, they're going to serve them for 400 years. Would you be counting? Would you be like, hey, when did we get here? When did we get here? What did your mama say? What did your grandmama say? All right, when did we get here? All right, you fast forward in the book of Exodus and it says 430 years to the self same day. All right, but would you have been counting? Oh, we got to be close. Man, I think my mama was, I don't know if your mama was right about when we got, you'd be counting. Verse 14, the nation whom they serve, I will judge. Yes, sir. My God's going to take care of them. Come on, God, it's been 400 years. I'm going to judge them. Afterward, they, my people, shall come out with great possessions. How would you like that verse stuck in the back of your head while you're in Israel, while you're in Egypt? The day's going to come. My God, He's going to judge you. He's going to take care of you. And when He's done taking care of you, guess what's going to happen to me? I'm taking your stuff. I'm going to come out of here. I'm a slave now. I'm going to come out of here with great possessions. How's that going to work out? Only through the providence of God is that ever going to happen. If you were down in Egypt as an Israelite, do you have any hope? If you don't even know these verses, do you have any hope? We're stuck. You ever think you'd be a baby in a basket? Fast forward 40 years, what happens? That baby's not a baby anymore. He's 40 years old. He comes out to see God's people. In Exodus chapter 2, it says he comes out to see his people who were oppressed. Did Moses lead them? Did he deliver them after 40 years? No. 40 more years. He was 80. Do you think of Moses being 80 years old when he delivered God's people? I mean, how old was Charleston Heston? I mean, he wasn't even 80. You think he's 80 years old. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. But there's some folks in here who are 80 years old. Are you ready to lead a bunch of whiners and complainers? Be like, I'm done with you. You know what I've heard is a great thing about grandkids? You get to play with them and then give them back. Here's Moses. He's got the babies, and he can't give them back. So come back to the book of Exodus. Here we are. Here's the fun part. You read Exodus chapter 1, and you think this is a done deal. But then you get into Exodus chapter 2, and you start seeing God's plan unfold. So you go down to the end of Genesis. You go down to the end of Exodus chapter 2. The end of Exodus chapter 2, verse 24. So God heard their groaning. I like that verse. Would you be groaning? Look in verse 23. The children of Israel groaned because of the bondage, and they cried out, and their cry came up to God because of the bondage. So God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant. Verse 25 says, God looked upon. Look at the verbs here. God heard their groaning. God remembered his covenant. He remembered his people. Verse 25, he looked upon his people. And the New King James says that he acknowledged them. What does that mean, that he acknowledged them? The end of verse 25. You got a Bible that says something different than acknowledge them? He took notice of them. What does that mean? Is God saying, oh yeah, well, I forgot about them over there. Is that what he's saying? God hears their groaning, and he's concerned about them. You think God hears our groaning? You think he hears us when we cry out to him? Here is his people crying out to him, and God looks down upon them and says, now is the time that I am going to bring them up out of this land. Look in chapter 3 and verse 7 as he's talking to Moses. The Lord says to Moses, verse 7, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So, verse 8, don't run over this. So, I have come down. Just think about that for a second. God hears their groaning, and he says in verse 8, I have come down. When God hears your groaning, guess what happens? He comes down. You ever talk to a kid? You know a little kid who's only like 1 foot nothing, and he's looking up at you, and you're like massive. No, only even if you're only 4'11" or something. If he's 1 foot nothing, he's looking up at you like, wow, this is a giant. But what happens when you get down and you're right there with him? Changes perspective, right? This verse says God came down to where his people are. To do what in verse 8? To deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians. He came down, don't run over this, he came down in order to bring them up from that land to a land good and large, remember the promise to Abraham, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Sorry, Mickey. So, He's going to come down to them in order to bring them up out of this land. You want to see how he's going to, can you imagine how he's going to do this? That God's going to take care of his people in this way, no matter what they're going through. Go to chapter 6. This is one of my favorite sections right over here in chapter 6. Because God has been back and forth with Moses at the burning bush. You remember Moses saying, well, I can't speak. I'm no good at this. Okay, your brother is coming. And he sends Moses and Aaron before Pharaoh. And they go before Pharaoh. And all this transpired. But I love this section in chapter 6. Look in, just for sake of time, drop down to verse 6. Chapter 6, verse 6. Therefore, God speaking to Moses, say to the children of Israel, I am the Lord, Jehovah. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will rescue you from their bondage. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. I will take you as my people. And I will be your God. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God who brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I will give it to you as a heritage. I am the Lord. Imagine if Moses took those exact words as he was told to do and spoke them to Israel, what you'd be thinking. 400 years is up. God's coming to judge this nation. How would you like God to say to you, I am your God. I've come here to deliver you. I have heard your cry, and I have come down to take care of you. Yes. That's deliverance. When we turn to the book of Exodus and read what God is going to do for these people, we are reading about deliverance. Now, does this have anything to do with us? Or is this just one of those great stories that has no application? This have anything to do with us? Huge. We ought to see ourselves. We ought to see ourselves in this story. We ought to see ourselves. Are there any parallels? Well, let me start with one list, and then we're going to go to another list and see if there's any parallels here. Okay, and I'm going to focus on some prepositions here about how the Lord delivered Israel. God delivered Israel from their slavery. Where were they? They're slaves. Does God want them to be slaves in Egypt? Does he want them to be in bondage? He delivers them out of that. He delivers them from it. Now, how did he do it? Now, here you're going to start making some connections before we ever make the connections. In order to get out of Egypt, what do you have to cross? What do you have to go through? Something called a Nile River. Would that be easy? I mean, suppose that your deliverance was, suppose you had to get to I-95 from here, and you had to do it in a straight shot. Could you do it? Is that little canal, is that going to bother you, that little canal? If your deliverance is right over there on I-95, all right? If God's got a limo with your name on it parked right over there, but you can't go around, you got to go straight. Is that little canal going to bother you? Some of you are saying yes, because some of you know what kind of critters live in that canal. But if your deliverance is right over there, would you say, for right now, I'm going to deal with this canal? What's the Nile River compared to that canal? Let's see. It's like nothing. There's no comparison. So how are we going to get out of Egypt? So you remember what happens. You remember that Moses brings them out of the land, and they get to the Nile River. Or the Red Sea, I guess I should be saying. They get to the Red Sea. What happens? People start complaining, right? Why? Because here's the Red Sea, and what's back there? Not just the land of Egypt. The army of Egypt is pursuing us. So here's the Red Sea, oh boy, and there's the people. And what are they doing? Complaining. Can God take care of that? Now, look over in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We don't have time to look in Exodus 14, although that's the cool part of the story. But look in 1 Corinthians 10, because what you have here is what? A Reader's Digest snippet of what happens in Exodus chapter 14. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea. All were, here's an interesting word, all were, what? What is that word doing here? You know, some people would think, just reading this passage, that, you know, some man who just was fixated on baptism, and some man who just thought baptism was important, that he stuck that word in there. Was that some man who put this word in here? Well, I don't think so. That was God. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. What is this talking about? It's talking about when God parted the Red Sea, and they walked through the Red Sea on what kind of ground? Dry ground. So where'd all the water go? The water parted, and it's over here on this side, and it's over here on this side. And what's up here? They were under the cloud. What's a cloud? Is that moisture? Is that water? So God says that they were, what does baptized mean? They were immersed. They were submerged. They were underneath the water in order to be delivered. Now, why in the world would he use the word baptize here? See? Why in the world would he use the word baptize here? Wow. God says there's something like what happened over here with the Israelites. There's something like what happens with you. They were delivered out of bondage. How did they get out of bondage? Through the water of the Red Sea. They could not get out of bondage if they did not go through the water. Any application for us? Well, I would think so. And they got into a new relationship. Remember what he said in Exodus 6. I will be your God, you will be my people. Whole new relationship that they get into with God. They're brought out of this bondage through the water into a new relationship with God. For what purpose? So that they could serve God. Don't lose sight of that. It wasn't that God just brought them out. Here, I delivered you, you're free, go do whatever you want. No. It's not I delivered you and I saved you and now you're free, go do whatever you want. I delivered you, I saved you for what purpose? So that you will serve me by your own choice. So that you will glorify me. Go to Deuteronomy 6. I've got 9.5 minutes. I'm watching the clock. Don't worry about it. I know I stand between you and your cookies. Look in Deuteronomy chapter 6. And I've got the whole chapter on the notes because the whole chapter is really cool. But we don't have time to look at the whole chapter. You know the early verses of this. You shall love the verse 5, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, with all your strength. Go down to verse 10. So it shall be, Deuteronomy 6, verse 10. So it shall be when the Lord your God brings you where? Into the land which he swore to your fathers. To give you large and beautiful cities, which you didn't build them. Give you houses, you didn't fill them. Give you wells, you didn't dig them. Give you vineyards, you didn't plant them. God's going to give all of this to you. But, verse 12, beware. Watch out, lest you forget the Lord who did what? Who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. So what do you do in verse 13? You shall fear the Lord your God and serve him. When Jesus was tempted by the devil, guess what he did? He quoted that verse right there. When he's tempted by the devil, you shall fear the Lord your God and serve him. Verse 14, don't you go after other gods. Verse 16, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. When Jesus was tempted, guess what he quoted? That verse right there. You shall not tempt the Lord your God as he tempted you. You shall, verse 17, diligently keep the commandments of the Lord. Look, there's so much more here, but drop down into verse 23. He brought us out from there, Egypt, verse 22. He brought us out from there that he might bring us in to give us the land which he swore to give to our fathers. And he commanded us to observe his statutes and to fear him. Did he bring us out just to do nothing? He brought us out to serve him, to glorify him in a new relationship with Him, ultimately to bring us unto the promised land. God, is that deliverance? I mean, is that the ultimate picture of what deliverance is even for us? That God took care of His people all of the way. And what do I have? 1, 2, 3, 4. Put 4 verses up there. There's scores of them throughout the Old Testament where God keeps coming back to His people. And He says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Why was that so important? Why did God stick a peg down right there at Egypt? And why did He keep going back to it? Even when you get over to the days of Samuel, so now you're about 500 years, 450, 500 years after the fact. You get over to Micah, you're almost 1,000 years after the fact. Why keep pointing back to that? That's old, God. That's like hundreds of years ago. He put a marker down there. He said, I'm the God who delivered you out of bondage, through the water, into a new relationship, so that you could serve me and I could bring you unto a new land. Was that important for them to remember? Yeah. Important for them to remember. Is there any parallel with any parallel to us? Well, how about this? Look at those prepositions. Same deal. God has delivered us. And one of the reasons I wanted us to stop and to see God saying, I came down in order that I might bring you up. He said that to the Israelites. Did He do that for us? God came down, right? Jesus. God came down to this earth. Why? So that He could bring us up. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 9 says, He became a little lower than the angels. He came down. Jesus became a little bit lower than the angels for a period of time on this earth. Why? Verse 10 says, so that He could bring many sons to glory. So that He could bring us up. Is that deliverance? So, just like the Israelites, He brought us out of that bondage. He brings us out of the bondage of sin. Is that worse than the bondage of the Egyptians? Yeah. I'm in the bondage of sin. I'm a slave before I become a Christian. I'm a slave to sin. But He sent Jesus down to bring us out of that. Now, how do I get out of the bondage of sin? I know there's a lot of steps to do that, but does water have anything to do with it? People don't want it to. Some people don't want it to. Religious world says, oh, no, baptism doesn't have anything to do with it. What if you went back to some of those Israelites and said, how did you get delivered? Oh, well, we had to go through. Oh, you didn't have to go through the water. You could have got out of there some other way. What do they looked at you like? Are you crazy? That's the only way we could get out of there is through the water. And God brought us through. What about today? Is there any other way to be delivered than through the water? Interestingly, the parallels, and when God brings us through the waters of baptism, we're brought into a new relationship with Him that we didn't have before. You're baptized into the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, a brand new relationship with them. So that He can bring you unto a new land, unto the promised land. Is that better than Canaan? To be brought unto heaven? But when God saved us, what was the purpose? The word for up here. Why did He save us? Just to do it? Just to see if He could do it? He delivered us so that we could serve Him. He delivered us so that we could glorify Him. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. You know this verse? We could look at any of those verses that are up there, the ones from Colossians. But real quick, we're gonna make one more point and then we're done. Look in 1 Corinthians 10. Just think about this concept in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 31. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 31. Therefore, whether you eat or drink, or let me just open this wide open. Whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Is that why God saved us, delivered us? So that I glorify Him. That's my purpose on this earth. Now, remember the Israelites? They needed to be reminded through all of these prophets, I am the God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Over and over, God said that. Do we need to be reminded sometimes what God's done for us, that God delivered us through baptism, through water, into a new relationship? You know, you probably haven't heard anything new tonight that you didn't know before. But do we need to be reminded that God did that for us so that we could be brought into a new relationship with Him, serve Him, that's the purpose, and get to go to heaven with Him? One last thing, go to Acts chapter 7. This is the last. Have you still got your marker over in Acts 7? Stephen's preaching this sermon, and he summarizes it here. But did Israel forget what had happened? Acts chapter 7. You go down, and he's talking about the things that transpired and the crossing of the Red Sea. Look at verse 39. They got to Mount Sinai. Verse 39. Whom our fathers would not obey but rejected, and in their hearts they turned back to Egypt. Are you kidding me? If God just brought you out of there, why would you want to go back? But they did, didn't they? They complained to Moses. You bring us out of here just to kill us. We'd be better off back there. In their heart, why? If you were oppressed and you were afflicted and you're in bondage and all, why would you ever want to go back to that? In their hearts, they turn. Verse 40. So they said to Aaron, "Make us gods to go before us. As for this Moses who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him." And they made a calf in those days, offered sacrifices to the idol, and rejoiced in the works of their own hands. What's wrong with that? They forgot what God did. Could that happen to us? Could we forget what God did for us? We've got to be careful. We've got to be careful that we don't forget. We've got to be careful that we don't lose sight of the price that was paid for us and what Jesus endured for us. In 2 Peter chapter 2, it says that we can get to a point where the latter end of our lives is worse than it was in the beginning. That we could turn our backs and turn our hearts away from Him so much that we would look worse in the end than we ever did in the beginning. We can't allow ourselves to forget what God has done for us. So tonight we've gone to Egypt. I hope this has been a beneficial study for us to go back and just discover, not some archaeological discovery tonight, but a biblical study to discover deliverance and to say, thank God He's delivered me even better than He did them. And to make sure that I do everything I can not to forget what He's done for me. Let's bow together and pray.